Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spannersready, and for this episode, we'll be talking sim racing. So be forewarned, it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, and of course, I appreciate it's a massive diversion away from F1. But my justification is twofold. B, when Formula One couldn't be with us, sim racing stepped up and kept the driver sharp and kept racing in the global consciousness. And firstly, Missed Apex throws itself into any form of racing where we can all compete with each other and you, as our audience, can come and race us too. And two, there's an option to skip this, but I hope you won't. Just don't send me angry emails. I'm joined by my fellow racers, Matt Trumpets.
Hey there, Spanners. How are we doing?
Pretty good. And the edgy and fragrant Kyle Power. How's it going, Kyle?
Hey, Spanners. All good. Cheers.
But they are not the experts of the day. We are joined by a gaming expert, owner of a real race car, and recent sim racing celebrity. It's Mike Channel. Hi, Mike.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing really well. If we can take a moment to sort of get to know you first. I am jealous of every aspect of your life, and before before we get even to sim racing or the fact you own a race car, the day job you have is, you know, just reviewing games. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so I used to work in magazines, video game magazines, and then about sort of 8 years ago, we set up a YouTube channel called Outside Xbox, doing a similar sort of thing that we were doing in magazines, but on YouTube. And it's sort of been going quite well. We're now at 2.5 million subscribers. We've got a second channel, Outside Extra, which is also going great guns. And yeah, it's just a really, really fun job. Basically, I get to, well, it's basically every 12-year-old's dream
job. Yeah, Matt, they're doing quite well. 2.5 million, quite well.
You know, we keep on meeting these people with these massive YouTube subscriber numbers, and I'm going to admit occasionally I begin to lose faith in your leadership on the YouTube side.
Whoa, you're like fully blaming me for that. That's unbelievable.
How many subscribers do we have?
Yeah, like 8,000. It's a long journey. Do you remember those days, Mike, of 8,000 starting from the beginning and watching that all the time?
Well, we were quite fortunate in that we were in a position to, we had a bit of backing, which not a lot of people get. So we actually were able to kind of quit our jobs fully and dedicate all of our time. And I think that's a key part of that sort of early success is that we were able to commit fully to working on the YouTube channel, which not everyone gets to do. Most people start their YouTube channels just as a hobby or in their spare time in addition to a proper job. So it's tough. Those early days are difficult. It's really difficult when you're pouring your heart into, you know, content that only gets a couple of hundred viewers. But we were able to be persistent and sort of really work at it and really finesse what we were offering to the point where, yeah, we've got a sort of fairly healthy audience now. And there's ups and downs and things like that. But I think our core audience is strong and we make some good stuff.
See, there you go, Matt. We've only been at this 7 or 8 years. We've got, you know, it's all ahead of us, really.
I presume they actually had some idea what they were doing when it comes to marketing and SEO, unlike ourselves, who we just guess.
Yeah, we've given it our best punt. But that's not even the thing we're most jealous of. Actually, with your outside Xbox, Kyle here was informing me that, you know, you're the only one out of those three reviewers that's really into sim racing and motorsport.
Correct,
so you get to just cherry pick every time something like that comes in. And then
Absolutely.
That's literally your job to review and play racing games.
Yeah. So I don't think it's illegal of me to reveal that I've got a copy of F1 2020. So I'll be playing that over the course of the next week in preparation for its launch next week. So that's quite exciting. Or I suppose when this goes out, probably this week.
Yes.
So I'll be playing the new F1 game. There's a bunch of other stuff in the pipeline that's quite exciting. And we get to do some fun stuff. Occasionally, the publishers of the game will, you know, put on some exciting event. So, you know, I'll get to go to a Grand Prix or get to be driven up the hill at Goodwood. Or what else have I done? I've done like numerous track days and stuff in relation to F1 games and other games. So I get to do some fun stuff. And yeah, because I'm the only one who actually gives a monkeys about that stuff, I get to do all those trips.
Nice. Didn't you get to go to the Austrian Grand Prix, was it, last
Correct.
Year?
Correct, yeah.
Fun with Pierre Gasly?
Yes. So, last year was really, really fun for me. Not a fun weekend for Pierre Gasly, you might recall. But yeah, I was over in Austria for the, sort of spoilt I am. I wasn't able to stick around for the actual race. So I just went for the Thursday and Friday to do the work because I knew I was going to Silverstone like the following week or 2 weeks. Time for the race. So I sort of had to ration my weekends away from the family. So I didn't stick around for the race, but I watched it at home having just flown in from Austria. But I got to hang out with Pierre Gasly and he had a rotten weekend, you might recall. Mm-hmm. And there were already lots of questions about his position at Red Bull at the time. And if you watch Drive to Survive, that's the sort of weekend they focus on him and Red Bull. So it was a real moment in his season. But I just loved seeing his redemptive arc over the course of the season. It was brilliant and pretty emotional, actually. I don't know anyone who, any F1 fan, I think, true F1 fan who didn't watch the end of Drive to Survive and sort of shed a tear or two because of how far he came and the result he got at the end of the season.
Well, I mean, even just at the end of the race when they went to his team radio and you could just feel it was raw. It wasn't like a look at me, whoop, whoop, whoop. It was just raw, like almost like relief and like
screaming.
Yeah. It was all that energy from his whole career just coming out in one radio transmission. Matt?
Well, you have this job. Why do you have a family? I just want to know, like presumably you review video games, you get flown all over the world, you can do anything you want, yet somehow you've acquired a family.
Well, I've been, this is going to sound even more spoiled. I've sort of been doing it for like 8 years now, longer, really. So, this is awful. You make me sound like an awful person here, but I'm very, very grateful for the position I'm in. But I also, I get to do that stuff and then, you know, relax and unwind by doing other things. So a lot of people will finish their job and then sit and play, you know, video games, racing video games, just for fun afterwards. But I get to do it as part of my job. So I get to also unwind and I get hours back in my free time to watch movies and spend time with my family.
Look, me and Matt, we're constantly, you know, battling to be allowed to go and please, can we, I've worked hard all week. Please, can I have a go on one iRacing game race, please? She's like, go and play your pretend race car game. It's not a game. So sim, that's what we're talking about, sim racing. Here at Missed Apex Podcast, we're pretty passionate that, you know, fans should turn a wheel. And that's why I'm so into putting on Missed Apex karting events and putting on the Missed Apex iRacing series that we've done. You know, there's not many football fans who've not had a kick around, yet motorsport fans, there's a huge number who've not sat there and turned a wheel. So our last bit of making you sound like an awful self-indulgent person, because we'd rather drag you down to our level than have to to climb up to yours. You own a racing car, and I'd love to hear about that. And also, you did a little series about becoming or trying to become a racing driver.
Yeah, yeah. So it's almost exactly as you describe. It's coming from a position of being a motorsport fan, you know, a lifelong motorsport fan. That motorsport fandom is intertwined with video games. I've always been into racing video games. And that series in particular was designed to sort of demonstrate what it's like as someone with no real sort of natural aptitude, no karting experience, none of that stuff. You know, can you go from literally sitting on the sofa every Sunday watching motor racing to actually being a racing driver? And how will you fare? And, you know, what's it like? And how intense is that experience? And does it give you a greater appreciation of the motorsport that you watch? And so that series, which I'm enormously proud of, and it was beautifully put together by the guys at Carfection. So it's the Carfection YouTube channel where you can see this series if you haven't.
I pretend I'm going to put a link in the show notes, but ultimately I forget. But I've got the link ready. Yeah.
But it was an amazing journey. So it was a very expensive journey. I should put that out there. I was saving for basically like a decade to make this happen. It's something I've always wanted to do. It was proper wish fulfillment. But I bought the racing car. It was a Ginetta G40 GRDC. So what Ginetta do is they'll sell you the car. And as part of that package, they also will enter you in a series of races with a bunch of other people who've bought the same car and have the same level of experience, which is zero.
Other gentlemen drivers.
Yeah, you're not allowed to enter if you have a race license already, if you've competed before. So it's really designed to be the first rung on the sort of motorsport ladder and to be a kind of level playing field. There's very little you can do in terms of setup. So it's in terms of equality in motorsport, it's a pretty rare thing in that it's very, very equal. And you're not going to be up against some like campaigning MX5 driver who's been doing it for 12 years and knows all the circuits inside out. So it's a really, really good experience. I definitely encourage you to watch that series if you are a fan of motorsport and if you've ever considered becoming a racing driver. But what I will say was it was one of the most sort of satisfying things I've ever done. When I got to that final race weekend at Brands Hatch and I had a couple of really strong results for me, just the sense of satisfaction and that buzz kind of lasted for weeks. And that's not something that's always the case. I think, you know, I'm a relatively like ambitious person. And so when I achieve something quite often, I'm sort of already thinking about the next thing and what's next for me. But actually for this, I actually was able to sort of sit back and really let it sort of soak in that I had done something that I'd wanted to do since I was a kid.
That's amazing. I'm just curious, when you bought this car, did you actually get a chance to drive it first? Or is it just sort of a thing you have to dive into and hope that it works with the way you drive cars in real life?
So I could have gone and tested it. And there are other options, certainly in the UK. There's the Caterham Academy. They do a great program, similar sort of deal in that it's a road legal car, although it's a slightly less comfortable road legal car, I would say. And then there's the Radical Cup as well, where the car isn't road legal and needs to be transported to the circuit. So there are a few options, but I kind of knew that Ginetta was the one for me. I'm a big fan of GT racing in addition to Formula racing. And I really like that idea. It's kind of baby GT. It's enclosed, you know, it's a space frame chassis. It really feels like you're in a sort of GT cockpit. So although I could have probably gone up to Ginetta and test driven a car or gone to Blyton, they own a circuit called Blyton Park in the UK. I just thought, you know what, this is what I want to do. I know this car is going to sort of suit me. And I'm looking forward to learning how to drive a car of that sort, basically.
Yeah, cool. You talk about the bars and the satisfaction at the end of it, but I think you allude to it in one of your first videos in that series. That far outweighs the utter terror that you must feel when you sit on grid for the first time. And what on earth am I doing? I've had it to a lesser extent in some karting series and stuff. And you must question why on earth you're doing it there. And you must feel pressure all through the race. But as soon as you finish, that release and that buzz. So that must feel fantastic after putting a season off.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, there definitely is a sort of fear factor. There's a kind of like generalized fear factor, which is like, am I going to embarrass myself? Am I going to break the car? Is it going to cost me more money than I can afford? Which are all very real concerns. And then there's the sort of localized terror, which is I'm going to this corner quite quickly. Am I going to be able to slow the car down and get it turned in and get survive on the exit, basically? So there's a lot of fear to get over. I think some of that would be, you know, if I did more and more seasons, that would kind of ebb away as I got more and more used to it. Certainly, you know, when I first got into a go-kart, I've never done karting sort of seriously, but I've, you know, done the odd, yeah. the odd karting day. And certainly the first time I was like, wow, this feels really, really quick. And you're sort of slightly nervous and stuff. But I would say now I'm super comfortable with karting and I'm definitely not afraid when I'm in a kart. But there's something slightly more terrifying about close to a ton of metal, like and fiberglass, flying towards a tire barrier and hoping you're going to be able to sort of tidy it up in time and keep it on the island.
I was in that the Peugeot 206 production cup car round Silverstone, soaking wet, and I was concentrating so hard I almost forgot to be nervous until the first time I forgot to brake at Abbey, ended up spinning off into the runoff area and went, oh my god, I have been far too complacent. Like, what is going on? And that's nowhere near the speeds of those cars. But let's move a little bit into the sim world, because you became something of an esports genuine celebrity. You know, you were getting commentated on in the Formula E Race at Home Challenge. You were being treated like a driver, interviewed by Dario and stuff like that. Like, firstly, like, with your credentials that you pointed out, did you get invited there purely on the strength of, you know, being a sim racing reviewer? Was that why you were invited along?
So the reason I was invited was actually more via sort of connections within the within the industry. So the guys who provided the PCs, Asus, ROG, are the guys who provided the PCs for all the drivers in the Formula E Race at Home Challenge. And I know one of the guys there, and he's a, you know, motorsport fan, sim racing fan, a bit like me. And they had an influencer race, basically, including guys like Jimmy Broadbent, who's a bit of a sim racing celebrity, Steve Alvarez Brown, Super GT, you might know him as, similarly a sort of sim racing YouTuber. And they had a spare spot on the grid for this sort of test race before the season even began. So they put me, you know, Sean over there put me forward for this. And I was obviously extremely thankful to be involved. And had a great time, had a really good battle, and would have probably been satisfied to leave it there. But I think because we've got quite a loyal audience on Outside Xbox, and I sort of tweeted about it and posted about it, and they sort of piled into the chat, and they were, you know, supporting and getting excited and, you know, commenting and things like that. And I think Formula E basically realized that, you know, not too many, but a decent proportion of the people watching these things were there sort of supporting me. And so, you know, they were happy to encourage that and happy to sort of have our fans along. So I got a few more invites to different rounds of the series, which was, you know, a great pleasure, and race against some really, really impressive sim racers.
Thing is, before we get to the sim racers, you're in there with other influencers. For example, if they did that with podcasters and you all had like the game chat on, if there was some series for just F1 podcasters, it would just be like us swearing at For F1's Sake podcast and just yelling at them and being quite competitive, you know, and or creating false rumours that they may have committed crimes. Did everyone actually get on? Did they?
Yeah, I think there wasn't so much of the kind of live chat stuff, I would say. We were on a Discord server together, right. So there was a bit of sort of text chat and stuff, but there wasn't really a lot of sort of voice chat in that particular championship. But it was a kind of chill atmosphere. Everyone was kind of laughing and joking in the Discord in terms of the text chat. So it seemed pretty good natured to me. Maybe it was more competitive than I realized. But then I was never really competing for the victory. So
what?
What would I know?
Oh, that's sickening to Kyle. Kyle's judging you now. Me and Matt were like, yeah, we know our level. So, you know, so as well as influencers, some of those influencers, of course, were really good sim drivers. And all these are kind of being live broadcast as well. So there is kind of like a performance pressure there. You're representing your brand as well. So, you know, like how was it from a competition point of view? Like, did you take it super seriously?
It was extremely nerve-wracking. I think the level of pressure, I mean, the level of scrutiny is far greater than when I did any kind of real racing. You know, we had a few crowds there, but no one really at a British GT weekend is going to know who I am. Whereas when it's broadcast on YouTube, it's a much wider audience. There's much more, you know, at stake there. And so, yeah, it was nerve-wracking. It was a weird feeling as well to have that same, like, race day morning jitters, but I'm sitting on my sofa instead of, you know, waking up at a racetrack and heading in for the driver's briefing and stuff like that. So a lot of the same emotions and a lot of the same pressure, and pressure to be consistent and perform when you're actually in the car as well. So it was tough. Yeah.
Well, I mean, me and Kyle have often talked about, and your pal Danny as well. You know, we've talked about how even for iRacing races, we're sitting there as the lights go green. We're sitting there, Kyle, and our hearts are like racing.
Yeah, I have a weird thing with sim racing. I get more nervous before a sim race than I do for a race in real life, oddly. The race in real life, you've got more adrenaline and you've got the vibration of the engine and you're sitting there and you can block it out. With a sim race, the concentration required is arguably higher, you need. And it affects, I get far more nervous before sim races than I do real life.
It's difficult because you're, it's really difficult to get into the zone. You've heard of the sort of theory in terms of sport, of the zone, as in where you're almost a sort of conduit for your kind of abilities, and everything else is kind of blocked out. It's really difficult to get that level of sort of blocking everything else out when you're sitting in front of a sort of computer screen or a TV. So yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it's really difficult to get into that level of focus and concentration that you can in a race car. And obviously also all of your sensations are kind of operating when you're in a race car, because you've got all the feel and the sound is more pervasive, and like you say, vibrations and things like that, all that stuff stripped away in iRacing, and all you've got to rely on is what you can feel through your hands on the force feedback steering wheel and what you can see on that screen. I'd agree it's difficult. I think certainly I would say there's similarities insofar as I make a lot of similar mistakes in sim racing to the ones I make in a real racing car. You know, the sort of fundamental driving ability is similarly limited across the two of them.
But yeah, you're equally as rubbish in a sim as you are in a race car. I think my karting errors and lack of general aggression and lack of racecraft definitely translate over to iRacing. But I think this is the crux of why I was reached out to you to come and speak to us, is I get a little bit fed up of people putting down esports and sim racing simply because you can't feel it through your butt. There's no risk of crashing into a wall at 300 miles an hour. And I think it really does down. I mean, you've been racing here with some influencers and some sort of people that would call themselves sim racing specialists. And I would prefer moving forward, I know it's been a stand-in for quote-unquote real motorsport, but it doesn't just have to be a facsimile of motorsport. It can be a discipline and a series and a sport, all of in of itself. And I have to say, I've gotten as much competitive spirit and enjoyment and adrenaline as I have from any physical sport I've played, and up there with karting as well. And I think it's hard to translate that to people who've not done it.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is that you have to try it. I think a lot of people who are kind of doing sim racing down are people who are only watching it as spectators, but don't have the facility or the will really to try it for themselves. And that's difficult because, we all love the sound of an engine. We all love the physicality of real motorsport, the sensations of speed and things like that. To a degree, the danger, I suppose, although I much prefer a safe race to an unsafe race. But I think if you tried it, you kind of understand that it's something that Jimmy Broadbent says quite a lot. He says the cars may not be real, but the racing is, and it is real racing. And I think when I went and did real racing for myself, I was expecting it to kind of blow sims out of the water entirely. And I was expecting it to kind of ruin racing games for me forever. And actually what it did was it gave me a renewed appreciation for just how close a sim can get now to those sensations, particularly something like iRacing, where you're racing against real people with similar levels of discipline because of the safety rating and stuff. That feeling of a race being an event and wanting to perform is absolutely there in sims if you take it seriously enough. You get out as much as you put in, basically, in terms of sim racing. And I think a lot of the people who criticize it are people who are putting nothing into sim racing, and therefore they are only ever going to get nothing out.
And I suppose, like, we with our series, we transmit it live, we do highlights videos. If you end up doing something dumb, for a fact that our director is going to put that on screen. So, like, for you, I mean, not only did you do the stay-at-home challenge, you also were, like, racing at the Legends with Coulthard and Nico Rosberg.
So that was the Heineken invited me, I think based off the fact that I'd done the Formula E stuff, to their challenge Legends at Home or something. I can't remember exactly what it was called.
They had some great names.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've been a Coulthard fan. I'm old enough to have been a Coulthard fan for a very long time. And I mean, just to share a track, virtual or otherwise, with him was brilliant. He's such a legend. I've been fortunate enough to meet him a couple of times, and he's been an absolute gent. So yeah, it was really cool to race against him. And then I got punted off by Nico Rosberg, who's a 2016
nice.
Formula One world champion. So, like, you know, proper wish fulfillment stuff. So that was really, really good fun. It was fun as well as a change of pace to play the F1 game, which is still, you know, very authentic, but not anywhere near as hardcore a simulation as R Factor is. So I was able to relax a bit more in that race and kind of just let it, you know, let the chips fall where they may, and know that I would have basic control over the car for the most part. So that was really, really good fun. It was a bit more of a kind of what you would call a casual experience.
Yeah.
But, so in terms of the names involved, it was incredible.
I bet. We were in a practice session, and we're assured it was the real Rubens Barrichello and his son both race in that series. You know, they just dropped in, and he's there on track, and you're like, that's the guy who's driven, I think, the most F1 races ever. Yep, there. Oh, and he's probably in Brazil or something like that. And it was Interlagos too. So that was a real thrill.
It's a strange moment of connection, isn't it? It's, even though you're thousands and thousands of miles away, you know, DC and Nico were in Monaco. For that half an hour or whatever, you're both doing the same thing, focusing on the same thing. And you might not be occupying the same physical space, but you are occupying the same virtual space, as it were.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, I had a similar thing. Carlos Sainz has cropped up quite a few times in my Formula 3 sessions in iRacing. It's just brilliant. It just adds to the whole thing. You're like, oh my God, there's the current McLaren Formula 1 driver like wasting me around the outside on this track. But yeah, I'm honoured to be passed by him.
Kyle, you know that's what the Missed Apex listeners think when they get on track with you in iRacing. They're like, oh my God, that's Kyle Edgy Power. It's so realistic. I can smell his fragrance. He smells so good. That's what they're thinking.
Hair in my eye from his beard.
So tell you what, we were all nodding along when we were talking about the F1 game not being, you know, that all and out sim experience. To any non-sim racing fans who've got this far in this very special episode of Missed Apex podcast, why isn't it a sim? What is that difference, that line between game and out and out sim?
I think it comes down to the physics engine, obviously. That's the underpinning of the entire thing. And this is not a failure on the part of Codemasters in terms of they've failed to make it realistic enough, because a Formula One game has to be accessible to fans of the sport, you know, and fans of the sport vary in their level of skill massively. Whereas a hardcore simulator like iRacing or R Factor is looking for the real top level of kind of enthusiasts. And so I think it's just to do with the level of stability the car has on the edge, the forgiveness in the tire, elements like that, I think are the thing that makes the F1 games a bit more sort of easy to manage and easy to handle. R Factor, I mean, you know, it really takes a lot to get dialed in and not sort of, you know, overdrive the car, basically. Certainly those Formula E cars were also a kind of unique challenge in terms of the level of weight they've got, the level of grip the sort of treaded tires have. You know, there isn't another top level motorsport that runs on treaded tires in dry conditions. And yeah, the regen braking as well is another factor. So they were quite challenging to get to grips with. R Factor has a lot of very clever maths going on under the surface. But yeah, in terms of the difference between a casual, more casual game, Simcade, you might call it, and a fully blown simulator, tends to be the behavior of the tire, right? That's the thing that is in contact with the asphalt, and how forgiving that tire is makes a difference, essentially.
Well, I was going to make a joke about how if it was a Formula One sim, most people would spend the first month they own the game just learning how to drive out of the garage without crashing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
But then you started talking about Formula E. Which model of Formula E car were you in? Was it the latest generation, or was it the previous one where the regen braking was really an art form?
It's it's the Gen 2. So, but I think it's not the Gen 2 Evo, I don't think. So I think that may be the difference. What's interesting about the Formula E car is that I believe in the real sport, there's quite a wide variation of transmissions. Some of them, I think, only have a single gear. Others have, you know, up to five gears. So the one in the game has two. And I heard Alexander Sims saying that was different from what they run in the BMW. So that's kind of interesting factor in getting my head around the gears and when to shift up and when to shift down or not. Because you've got a lot more torque available to you in an electric engine. That sort of instant torque delivery. It was, again, like a real challenge getting my head around that when you're used to, in a Formula One game, you know, banging up and down the gearbox like crazy every single corner.
Yeah, with the Formula One game, F1 2019, I was a massive fan. I did the career mode. I think I got to my third season. I was a bit of a masochist. It was like no assists, forced cockpit view, manual ERS. So, and I should say it's extremely, extremely difficult when you have all of the assists off, but they have to make it a wide window for people to be able to compete with you on pad. And we ran our own championship. We had pad users who were almost as quick as, or some of them were quicker than the wheel users. But again, it's that making it available to play on pad for the masses is where they lose the little sim element. Like you can jam the brakes on mid through a slide to save it where you couldn't really do in real life, or jam down to first in a hairpin to get the extra rotation where the gearbox wouldn't let you. So when I moved over to iRacing, the cars don't let you jam down the gearbox. So I was forever running on at first because I was trying to come down the gearbox like Formula One and it just simply wasn't letting me.
Yeah, I think it's, and that's not to say that there aren't sort of little tricks that the really top level guys have managed to uncover in R Factor 2. Certainly the way they were getting rotation into the car in certain corners was far beyond what I was able to do, but there are sort of you know, no simulation is absolutely perfect, and there are sort of exploits, but I think the exploits are harder to find in the more accurate sims than maybe in sort of Formula One, where as a sort of relatively average player like myself, you can still work out some little tricks to get a bit of extra speed out that you wouldn't really be able to do in real life. And I think you see that in the sort of Formula One esports racing, some of the overtakes they pull off, you would never see anyone attempting those in a real car. And it's exciting because they're good overtakes, but they're really a little extreme compared to the real thing.
I
said it's the lack of consequence on the simmer in these games. There is no consequence, so they can try and they're not going to write the car off or hurt themselves. So why not have a go?
Well, you're leading into the point that I was going to make there, Kyle, which is where I think iRacing, and I'm not sponsored by iRacing, but I think where that stands sort of head and shoulders is, even though it's a sim, you wouldn't make those moves you're describing because it has a realistic damage model. You get incident points, safety points for going off track, and you can get disqualified if you have too many. And that really adds to the sporting element. And that's the only reason old codgers like me and Matt Trumpets there can compete, is because while the young'uns are going about losing their heads and losing bits of wing, we're gently toddling about waiting to pick up the pieces. But that damage model, Mike, is so essential. The only thing I didn't like about the Formula E sports version was damage being off. And sometimes you would get like this funnel of crashing cars with no damage, and they were like moving like a swarm. But once you got into the racing, it looked amazing.
Yeah, I think they sort of ramped up the damage as the season went on. So certainly the first race there was no damage, which was great because I definitely hit the wall a couple of times. But by the sort of third or fourth race, I did manage to rip the wheel off, but I did hit the hit the wall quite hard. But yeah, it's, I mean, the damage thing, like you say, with iRacing, I think it's really fascinating to me. And again, I sort of said, I'm a big fan of kind of GT and endurance racing as well. So I did the iRacing Le Mans 24 the other weekend with a bunch of friends.
So did Matt, and, I think. Matt was in that.
Yeah, it was.
I did that too.
It was really good fun, but it does reward that kind of endurance style of driving where you drive within your limits. You know, you don't push it too hard in every corner, and you know, you'll make up like six spots over the course of a stint because other people are throwing off the road, or you know, they've got 20 minutes of repairs because they've, you know, stuffed it into the barrier. iRacing definitely rewards that kind of racing, but I spent a long time grinding my safety rating to get my license up to the point where I could compete in the 24 with my mates. And now that I've done that and I've got my sort of licenses, I might go back into some F3 races or something and really start throwing about a bit and see what I can actually do rather than driving that far within my limits.
Well, I think that's the thing about the community within iRacing. And I don't know if this is similar in R Factor or other sims, because I've not really thrown myself into them. But like, I used to get frustrated in like 2012, which is the last time I think I played a Formula One game using the Microsoft Xbox force feedback controller. Oh, glory days. And I would love playing the single player campaign. As soon as you got into a lobby, you would just get smashed around and it was pointless. But iRacing has this wonderful kind of license system as well. So you have to earn the right to kind of go up to the higher cars and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong, it's not the cheapest model, but it's policed so well that it's almost like a real sport, and you feel this kind of, you're climbing a ladder with real people.
Yeah, it's regulated very similarly to real motorsport. Obviously, they've got their own nuances based on it being an online platform and stuff. But I think the key thing as well is that rather than a lot of games kind of twist themselves in knots trying to apportion blame for incidents. So, you know, something like Gran Turismo will try and give one car a penalty for hitting another car and not penalize the car that was hit, but then you get false positives and, you know, bizarre sort of problems there. iRacing's approach is, if you were in an incident, your safety rating is going down. So everyone's driving extremely carefully because they know if there's any contact whatsoever, they're both going to get a penalty. No one gets out of it sort of scot-free. So that, I think, does have a really, really positive effect on the level of competition. There are still crashes. There are still frustrations. And if you join the rookie MX5 races, you are going to see a load of first-year incidents. Yeah. But in general, I think it improves the quality of the competition, improves the quality of the driving. I think just by the very nature of having these big event races and things like that, something like the Le Mans 24, people have been preparing for that for potentially weeks or months on end, testing and, you know, making setups and things like that. So when they get into it, they are taking it seriously, even though they're not going to have to pay for any damage if they crash the car. What they're worried about is their race being over, like you would be in a real race. And letting down their teammates, which you would in a real team-based race as well. So the stakes are raised by the damage model and by the safety rating, and I think people take it seriously as a result, and so the quality of racing overall improves.
Yeah, they take it so seriously. I've heard in some cases that podcasts' show notes are really low priority and just abandoned to the wind. That I've heard that happening on some shows. Don't know. Kyle?
As I said, all of that consequence added, the added consequence, the safety thing, just makes the racing very organic and very natural. So people are treating it as if it was their own car because it's their license they're trying to protect. And that was my biggest sort of revelation when I came into iRacing from console racing, was it's like I'm racing in the real world. These people are actually taking it serious and they're not ramming me. There's not somebody going backwards trying to take out the leaders all the time. And it's fantastic. It's that other jump up. And I felt at times, you know, especially in VR, you kind of forget you're doing the game after a while. You genuinely feel like you're in that race.
We do sound a little evangelical, don't we? since we've already gone way over how long we said we would keep you, for which I apologise. Just wanted to talk a little bit about the accessibility of sim racing. Now, just to be slightly controversial and to court many emails, I'm sure, sim racing with proper gear being accessible, being a bit less expensive than a race car, overall, it is in danger of attracting enough people at enough of a standard and having enough high-quality competition to actually have a better overall driving standard than a sport that has a relatively smaller amount, quote-unquote real motorsport, where the barriers to entry are so high.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't think we're, any of us are saying that it will ever sort of replace real motorsport. No. And I think we're at a really interesting point right now, which is that Formula One is back now in real life. And it's going to be really interesting to see what sim racing looks like over the coming months, because it's had, you know, it's had an amazing stage on which to kind of show its wares. I think it's changed a lot of people's perceptions of it. There's been some amazing events. Obviously, all the stuff the race has organized, the Legend Series, the Formula E stuff was brilliant. The F1 esports stuff has been a great show from a kind of spectator perspective in terms of getting celebrities in there. Obviously, it's very different from their existing esports offering, which is very impressive as well. And things like the virtual Le Mans 24 virtual was an amazing event, you know, from a presentational point of view, from the driver lineup that they got, which is better, I think, than, which kind of alludes to your point, better than the real Le Mans 24 driver lineup, because it was a mix of, you know, races from all eras and all disciplines, all kind of crammed in together. So they've had an amazing few months. I think it's shown sim racing in a brilliant light. There have been technical hitches. There will always be technical hitches. But I think what's really interesting is where sim racing goes from here. And I think, like you say, hopefully it's kind of changed enough perceptions that it will exist alongside real motorsport, and perhaps at times when real motorsport doesn't happen. So I can fill my weekend quite handily with F1, F2, Porsche Super Cup, IndyCar, GT World Challenge, the VLN, you know, all these things I could easily fill up, but they all happen on a Saturday or on a Sunday. A sim race can happen any night of the week. So if you want to, you know, if you've got an itch to watch some motorsport on a Wednesday evening, that's when sim races should be. And I think that's what they've done with the F1 esports stuff as well. It's tended to be kind of weeknights, you know, in between races. It also is an excuse to fill up the winter season and keep people sharp during the winter. I think we'll see a lot more of the real life athletes who are the draw in a lot of these sim racing races that we've been watching. I think you'll see a lot of them using sim racing more, having been exposed to it in quite an intense way during this lockdown, using it more during the winter season to have fun, stay in touch with their mates. You know, the friendships between guys like George Russell, Lando Norris and Charles Leclerc has just been beautiful to watch, you know, across all this sort of live streaming and sim racing. So I think they'll want to, in the same way that you and your mates want to get together and do some iRacing, they'll want to keep in touch over the winter season when they're out of a car and keep sharp by sim racing. So I don't think anyone's assuming that we're going to be watching as much sim racing as we have been doing. Real motorsport just looks and sounds better. It's always going to, and it's the stakes are always going to be that little bit higher as a spectator. But I do think sim racing has done some amazing work, and I think it will be a sort of fixture just by the nature of the fact that, you know, as motorsport fans, we should consider ourselves very, very lucky that we have the opportunity to play a simulation at home for a moderate cost. I'm not saying it's, you know, super cheap, but if you buy a steering wheel and pedal set and you buy a console, that is enough to have something that is a pretty close analog to the experience of real racing. Football players can go for a kickabout in the park, but they don't get to race at, you know, they don't get to play at Wembley necessarily, or, you know, like we get to race at Silverstone, for example. So I think we should, as motorsport fans, we should all feel very lucky that we can get that close to the real thing from the comfort of our own home. And I think that's the reason why probably sim racing, certainly as a participatory thing, is definitely going nowhere. It's only going to be more popular, particularly as a bunch of people have probably bought sim rigs to keep themselves sharp over the course of this lockdown period when they're stuck at home. But I think also as a spectator sport, it's gained a bit more respect, a bit more interest from the names that are a big draw. And I think it will be here in a more prominent fashion than it was before lockdown, in an ongoing way, hopefully.
Well, you know, talking about getting close to it, we asked our driver pro, Bradley Philpott, who is a Nordschleife specialist and drives in the VLN. We said, you know, when you do that similar kind of setup in your sim rig, he's got a better sim rig than we have. But when you do it, how close do you get to the feeling and the experience? And he was very bullish about it. He said, you know, no, really, really close. I get most of that same experience in my sim rig in VR. in virtual reality. But I think the real appeal for esports, where it's got real potential, you said it will never be more popular than real motorsport, is the ladder. So the if you have the very elite and then you have lower leagues with promotion and stuff like that, there is that outside dream that, you know, you and I could sit there in the lower divisions and work our way up to the one that's on the telly, even if it's late night Channel 4 or the equivalent. You know, there's that same kind of football league spirit that doesn't exist in real motorsport.
Yeah, I mean, real motorsport is still, as someone who's done it, prohibitively expensive. That's just it's just the nature of it.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, it's not completely like free to get into sim racing, but the barrier to entry is so much lower that sim racing is much closer to a true meritocracy than real motorsport will ever be.
Yeah.
Because you know, you have to be able to buy your way into real motorsport. Whereas if you're a kid with, you know, and you're living in a council house, you know, in a sort of poor area of, you know, some city,
let's say Luton, to find the sure, to say the worst
why not,
possible
Luton.
One.
Yeah. If you can get your hands on even just a controller, you know, a lot of the GT Academy guys started off on controllers. You know, they developed their love of sort of racing on a PlayStation pad. But the quick guys are quick, whatever they're using. You know, you don't need a direct drive steering wheel to be quick. You know, the fast guys are fast. And so in that sense, you know, it is a true meritocracy. And that will never be the case in real motorsport. But what I'd like to see is more cases of really, really fast sim racers getting the opportunity to drive real cars. Because I think it's more and more being proven as a kind of valid way to assess talent. And there's a guy called James Baldwin, drives for a sim racing team called Veloce, which is owned by John Eric Verne, I think. And he is scheduled to be racing in the GT World Challenge Europe in a McLaren 720S GT3. And it's going to be really interesting to see how he fares against a bunch of quite handy peddlers in that championship.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you'd think Jan Martinborough would be the classic example of that. And that came out of, I believe, it was a reality show that, was it Sony that put it on, or mm-hmm. Nissan, or a combination?
Yeah, Sony and
of
Nissan, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, he's Jan Martinborough is a really interesting example. He's plying his trade in Japan at the moment. But I think it's, like you say, that was a long time ago, and it's sort of a shame that more people haven't come through that system. I think Nissan were big supporters of it, but obviously Nissan have kind of mostly pulled out of motorsport now. You know, aside from in Japan, which is, I think, why Jan is still out there. But like there's Lucas Ordóñez, and Jan and a few other guys, I think Wolfgang Reip and guys like that, who came from that GT Academy program, but no one's really stepped up in a kind of sustainable way, like a non-marketing way, in terms of using sim racing as a legitimate talent search, you know, and in theory, you know, if you're looking for, I suppose the problem is that sim racers do need some refinement when they get in a real car. It's not exactly the same, and they have to learn how to assimilate all of this extra information, all the sensations, all the stuff coming up through your bum that people always talk about as the difference between sort of sim racing and real racing. So they do need a bit of shaping, but I think, you know, professional teams should be looking very, very seriously at this. And I think what I find really fascinating, and it's not a pure example, but it's something I think as Formula One fans on a Formula One podcast, you should be keeping an eye on, is a guy called Igor Fraga, who is a Gran Turismo world champion. He also has raced Brazilian F3. So he was a racing driver, ran out of budget, again, this thing about it not being a meritocracy in real-life motorsport, ran out of budget, and then turned to sim racing just, you know, to continue racing in some form. Turns out he's pretty good at that as well, has made a name for himself in sim racing, has now backing from Gran Turismo on the back of that, and will be racing in an F3 car in Austria this weekend. And by the time this podcast goes out, we'll know how he's done. But I suspect he's going to be pretty quick. And it would not surprise me if he was the first. And like I said, it's because he'd done some racing before. It's not an absolutely pure example. But I think he might well be the first person to make it to F1 with a kind of strong,
hybrid,
heavy sim racing background, as opposed to a sort of continuous motorsport career. Which most people do.
Yeah, he's used it to kind of like duck back and then duck forward. So even, you know, his story of getting up, his hybrid story will include sim racing, which will further the goal. And the technology is only going to get more realistic, more sensitive. It's only a matter of time before, you know, you have force feedback, bum patches. And then we can get rid of that kind of God of the Gaps argument as we start feeling it through our bum as well. Mike, thank you so much for your time. We'll plug your channel and your Twitter, because you need our help. You're not even at 42,000 followers on Twitter.
So I know, I should try harder, really, shouldn't I?
So go give him a little follow. Go on a sympathy follow. It's at Mike Channel with two L's. I would have leaned into that. Chanel. I think I would have gone with Chanel, but you've stuck.
It makes
Chanel.
You sound more sophisticated, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I'm a pretty basic kind of guy.
And also go and check out their stuff at youtube.com/outsideXbox2, and I'll remember to put the link to your Becoming a Racing Driver series in the show notes. I super duper promise. Follow my panel at MattPT55, follow Kyle at KylePowerF1, and me at SpannersReady. Until we see you next, be brave, because wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex, a simulation. I think this is a simulation as well, because I've got a 10-year-old who's trying to convince me to order 25 kilograms, he sent me a link just now, of carbon, because he's convinced that with explosive force, he can make a diamond out of it. So that's what I'm going back to. Now, he's
that's
like...
That's fantastic.
He said, that's some entrepreneurial spirit right
No,
there.
He said to me, but that's how it happens on Jupiter. I'm like, no, we're not creating the pressure of Jupiter in our back garden.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.